Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer-director Ivan Kavanaugh, whose new horror thriller, Sun, is out March 5th. And this is a very, very intriguing film. Hi, Ivan, welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
So you wrote and directed this movie. What was your inspiration for this story?
Well, it all began about 5.5 years ago after my my first son was born. And he had a very, very difficult birth, you know. And we were very worried about him for the first few months of his life. And we had a lot of sleepless nights. We had very stressful time. But during that time, I saw how close him and my wife were becoming, you know, that mother-son bond, which is so primal, so very different from so much closer than a father-son relationship, you know, and especially when they're babies. And I just got thinking, is there anything a mother who loved her son more than anything else wouldn't do for him? Is there anything she wouldn't do to protect him, you know? How far would she go to protect them? And that was really the very personal starting point for the film, you know, and I began jotting down ideas in between feeding the baby and getting up in the middle of the night with no sleep. And it was a way for me as well to get rid of all my anxieties. And I tried to do that with all my films. I tried to, it's like self-therapy in a way. you know, my fears about feeling helpless when your child is sick and not being able to do anything and loving your child so much that you don't want anything to happen to him and you do anything to protect him. So the seeds of the story were very personal.
Well, those seeds turned into a very intriguing thriller/horror. And the thing that struck me most was how the movie was shot. There are a few scenes during the days, but most of the dark scenes are very almost claustrophobic in the way that they heighten Laura/ Anna's isolation. And was that intentional to sort of heighten her anxiety by making it seem like how alone she was by focusing on that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the way I saw it, it was like she goes from like an almost Norman Rockwell idyllic view of America, and she descends in kind of a hell into like a taxi driver type hell, you know. And how we achieved that was it was how we shot it. I mean, I planned every shot in the film. Every shot was pre-planned, and I worked very closely with the production designer, and we painted the walls so they'd be very anxiety-inducing colors, like very garish colors. We wet down the walls in all the motels in the film with this oil, so it looks like the walls are sweating. We used a lot of very sickening primary colors for the neon signs. I mean, really, I wanted to convey a sense of her descending into this hell where it seems always to be nighttime, you know? And so it was very conscious, and the sense of claustrophobia with her of being trapped in this nightmare was very conscious and very, very planned.
For me, it was very interesting to see how everyone around her seemed to be gaslighting her about what she went through. And it didn't take me long to figure out the tie to the beginning and the twist coming at the end, but the way the tension is stretched in some of the key scenes really, really just heightened my paying attention to the cinematography, to their performances. Her desire to protect her son, but her unwillingness to do what she needed to do to help him through his pain was palpable. Yeah. And the cult aspect, we've seen cults trying to create children to usher in good or usher in evil before, but the pervasive undercurrent of how her upbringing affects her behavior now. How did you get her to pull this off? Andy?
Andy Matuszek. Yeah, she's amazing in it. I mean, again, casting is crucial for that because, number one is I knew I could help her in the construction of the film. So in the film, you're never quite sure whether she's insane or sane, you know, because in one scene, we see what she sees. We're with her. So it seems completely real. But I purposely then would put the next scene, somebody saying, actually, in fact, she's insane. Or actually, in fact, what you just saw is not real. So you're never quite sure where you are with her, you know. I also knew that she'd have to go places and have to do things that were absolutely horrendous, you know. But you needed to be with her always. And the way to do that was mostly through casting. And Andy, the actress, Andy Matuszek, is such an intelligent, charismatic, really nice person that I knew if she could just convey some of her real self on the screen, then the audience would love her and just go along with her always, you know? And also, again, that primal mother-baby or mother-child bond, everyone understands a mother's need to protect her child from harm, you know? So you were going to find instant sympathy for her in that way, you know. So it was a combination of things that kept that up throughout the film, you know.
Now, I'm a huge fan of practical special effects, especially when it comes to supernatural and horror. Talk about some of the setup in this, because there are a few scenes where I'm like, oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. The practical effects. Well, I mean, I grew up with practical effects in movies, you know, and I always loved them. I mean, for me, it's gone too far to get away with CGI. And when I use CGI, which is very little, I use it to aid the MFX or the practical effects, and it should be almost invisible, you know. And now there's a push towards, especially in studio big budget movies, a push towards the CGI being very visible, you know. And I think the audience deep down knows that it isn't real, you know, that it's a computer generated. But at least, I mean, for me, the prime example of it is the two King Kong movies. Well, there's three, but we'll say two. The original one from 1939, which is a clay puppet, you know, it's stop motion. And then we have the Peter Jackson one where it's CGI. For me, I had more emotional investment in that clay puppet than anything in the billion-dollar CGI version. And because I think deep down, you know, it's physically there. And I think it does make a difference, you know. And so that's something I always try to do in my films, is to do as much as I can practically, no matter how hard it seems or how long it takes to shoot. And it's much cheaper for the producers to say, okay, we'll do the CGI, and it's much easier. But for me, you can't beat those practical effects. I love doing it. It's great fun.
And that brings me to our young anti-hero who spent 80% of the movie covered in blood and gore. How did he enjoy that or not enjoy it, whichever actually happened?
Well, you know yourself, kids love all that stuff. They love all of the icky stuff and the goop and the goo. And it was just a big game to him. He loved it. I mean, for him, the boring scenes were the talky scenes in between. He wanted to get to all of the good fun, you know. Luke was just amazing. He's just an amazing young actor, you know. And he had a blast on the set, and he loved every minute of it. He didn't want to leave the set, actually.
Well, that's good to hear. Hopefully he has a long career in monster movies ahead of him.
Yeah, I hope so. Because he loved every minute of it. So I hope so. Funny.
Cool. Now, I don't want to get into spoilers, but there are definitely some twists in this film that sort of highlight the fact that Laura had good reason to be very, very concerned, and most of the people around her who didn't take her seriously, shall we say, paid the price for their lack of attention. But was that intentional to sort of just make the people around her become less and less believing or trusting in what she's telling them is going on?
Again, definitely. That was, you know, I mean, the audience thinks it looks like she's being gaslighted by all of these people, you know, or some of the people, or the audience has seen what she's seen. So they're saying, why don't you believe her? Please believe her, you know, or else they're on their side and the audience is thinking, you know, actually she is crazy, you know. So that was very, very intentional. You know, there had to be, most people in the film had to be disbelievers. I mean, I suppose if you were told things about demons and whatever else, you wouldn't believe it until you've seen it either. So it had to be that way, and that was very planned.
And the thing I wanted to highlight was there are two scenes. I'm not going to go into which ones, but you see Laura overhearing conversations, and it's easy to misinterpret what's being said. So there's a question in the audience. It's like, did she really interpret it this way, or are these people talking about it this way? And I liked that little bit of misdirection because it kept you asking questions. And so for writing that little bit of shall we say mind gamery, thank you.
Yeah. Well, that stuff is great to write. It's such fun to write that stuff, you know. That to manipulate the audience is so great. I mean, that's why they're the type of films I love that keep me guessing until the end, you know. Or just when I think I have something figured out, a spanner is thrown into the works, you know. And then you go the other way, and then you go the other way again. That stuff is great fun, I think, you know.
Cool. So after Sun, what have you been working on, or can you talk about it yet?
Yeah, sure. I just finished writing an 8-part TV series for MGM. It's called The Vanishing Triangle. It's set in Ireland in the mid-90s. It's based on a true crime story. And we're hoping to go into production with that late summer, perhaps, in Ireland. And I've just finished a new script with the crime writer John Bassoff. It's called Vengeance, and it's a violent neo-noir. I'm very excited about it. We've had some buzz about the script already, and that's going to hit the financing. And I've been offered a couple of horror scripts that I'm considering as well. So it'd be one of the above, you know. So there's something coming very soon.
Awesome, awesome. Are there any spots on social media or online where people can keep track of what you're working on next?
Actually, I used to be on social media. I used to be on Twitter and Facebook and all that, but I found it too distracting for my work, so I stopped it. You know, I was one of those people who was always checking Twitter or whatever, and I said, I'll never do any work if I could keep this up. So I'm not on any social media at the moment, but people can usually find me if they really want to, you know.
Awesome, awesome. Wise decision there.
Yeah, it was the best thing I ever did, actually, not for the moment.
Cool. Well, Ivan, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolute pleasure.
The movie is Sun. It'll be in theaters, on demand, and digital on March 5th. We'll have some links to where you can find it. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of slice of sci-fi.
Again, that is Sun, available from RLJE Films and Shudder, written and directed by Ivan Kavanaugh. And this movie is really, really intriguing. The pacing for me falls in a couple of spots, but the tension and the questions about what Laura will do to protect her son David from the people she remembers having to run away from is very, very interesting. The one thing I have not figured out or was unable to actually figure out from the film, and this isn't really a spoiler so much, there is mention that Laura had been institutionalized after her ordeal in her father's cult. If she was institutionalized, where was David, her son, during that time? Because the first thing we see is her escaping and giving birth in the car she's running away from these people in. So if she had already had the baby, why didn't they take him when she was institutionalized? Especially later when we see the cops talking to her doctor from that institute. So I have questions. There might have been a few things that were glossed over or maybe I missed. But it is a very intriguing exploration of a mother willing to protect her son and then realizing that she can't. And the choices she makes in order to try to rescue him or rescue the world from him. Pretty interesting. Again, the movie is Sun. I'm not sure if it's going to be on Shudder or if Shudder just produced it. I should have found that out, but I didn't. Whoops. That said, how do you like to approach movies that play with perception, both the main characters and your own as a viewer? Let me know. Send an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, or leave a question or comment here on the website with this episode. I love discussions, so start one up. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let folks know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. And yes, I will get into a lot of discussions over there. Science fiction, horror, fantasy, sometimes books. Books are cool. Comic books, definitely. Baseball. Soccer. I am a long-suffering Orioles fan and a Mets fan, so have pity on me once the season starts. No, I'm actually hoping one of the two teams does well this year. There are many conversations I'll get into about movies and TV on Twitter as well, so come on by, check it out again at Slice of Sci-Fi on Twitter. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by. Comment on any of the interviews and reviews we have here. That's what we're here for, to get geeky conversations going. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting the show and all of the podcasts and websites that are part of the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, like Writers After Dark and Babylon Podcast. Your donations through PayPal, your pledges through Patreon really do help keep all of the lights on around here. So thank you so much for supporting. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And people who are patrons are eligible for perks. We have DVDs around here, Blu-rays, books that our patrons get first dibs on. Also, let me know if there's a better way you'd prefer to help. One other way is through PayPal, paypal.me/scifisummer is there if you would like to add your support but don't want to commit to a monthly pledge. And if there's something, a service other than Patreon, let me know. I want to make it easier for you to help support what I'm doing here to provide you better entertainment. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.